Your Honors, my name is Elizabeth Garfinkel, and I represent Appellant Lupe Mercado. And I'd like to reserve, let's say, 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Each of the counts pursued by the government required Ms. Mercado's precise knowledge that she was assisting a specific person whom she knew was substantially motivated to kill her daughter's pimp in order to promote or maintain his position in a racketeering enterprise. She was acquitted of the counts whose jury instructions included this specific knowledge element. And she was only convicted of the count that had erroneously omitted that element. The government has not met its burden on appeal to prove this omission of the element did not contribute to the verdict. Indeed, at trial, the government failed to present a sufficient evidentiary foundation establishing Section 3's mens rea, or even its actus reus under this court's precedent. This total failure of proof of these essential elements requires dismissal of Ms. Mercado's only remaining conviction.
But I just want to be clear, you talk about elements. I thought that what your argument is focused on was the motivation of the person she was allegedly aiding and abetting to kill, whether that was to further his position in an organized family or not.
In a racketeering enterprise, Your Honor?
Or simply as a favor to Lupe.
The knowledge element for Section 3 is that she knows that she is assisting a specific person who committed a federal offense. And it has been established by several precedents, including Banks, that an element of that offense is the knowledge of the vicar purpose. And that vicar purpose has to be to aid the racketeering. So the member of the, she has to know that someone is a member of the organization and that person committed, and that person was substantially motivated to maintain his position in the enterprise and that the killing was committed for that purpose.
And does she have to know, it may be a subtle question, that it was also a federal offense?
It has to be a crime against the United States. And so, yes, that is a federal offense. And we have cases like Graves where the distinction is whether or not the friend knew he was assisting someone who was a felon in possession as opposed to just unlawful possession.
But that's because of the elements of the federal defense. She doesn't need to know that it is a federal offense.
Correct, Your Honor. So here, not only is there no evidence that they had a substantial vicar purpose, that any of the killers had a substantial vicar purpose for killing Calvin Sneed, for killing Ms. Mercado's daughter's pimp, but there is, there's no evidence that she would know about that. The most the government points to is people talk, but has ever been sufficient to substantiate knowledge in this court's decisions.
So could I ask, say we agree with you about the jury instructions, so we think that this does need to be reversed. I think you still have this substantial evidence argument that we need to decide because of double jeopardy, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, and also to dismiss the conviction.
But we would Well, that's the same thing, right? The point is it permanently dismissed. It can't be retried if you win on substantial evidence.
Exactly, Your Honor.
So can you speak to that part, how the jury had no basis to infer, say, that Antonio was doing this for a vicar purpose?
Yes, Your Honor. There's nothing to show that in 2012, Antonio had any concern with CDP. He was last involved with CDP 7 years prior. He had been living in Los Angeles, pursuing an acting career. There's no evidence that he that anyone in CDP thought that prostitution was the kind, that pimping somebody was the kind of, was so exploitative that it required a violent response. The things that the government points to, these are really these like media stereotypes, entertainment tropes of any disrespect requires violence. That's just not in the record. We have a few incidents of actual murders requiring violent retaliation, but nothing about another person's pimping a family member would require that sort of a response. So I discuss in the reply brief the Gardner case, which I think is very helpful in explaining how simply creating a framework is insufficient. There needs to be a substantial foundation in evidence, something in the evidence that actually supports this purpose. And not only is that lacking, but there's nothing showing that she would have heard that. There needs to be something in the evidence showing that she could have heard about that, not just that, you know, it would be presumed that because Antonio called her mom, he must have told her, oh man, I really want to get back in the gang, and that's really important to me. I mean, that's just not there.
This is jumping a little bit, I realize, to the co-defendant, but I mean, if the jury was right about the RICO conviction in the other case, then does that suggest that there would be enough evidence to retry your client for the Vicar purpose?
No, Your Honor, because again, there needs to be evidence of her knowledge that anyone had that she was assisting. It's important to note that she had to be assisting the person who had that purpose. Like, she had to know that the person she was assisting had that purpose. That's another thing that was left out of the instruction, by the way. I mean, the instruction made it look like she could just assist Barry without knowing whether he had that purpose. So
Barry did have that purpose, given that they're a couple and basically working together. I mean, could you not infer that whatever Barry was helping, then she is also has knowledge of helping the same thing?
Your Honor, I think you can't infer anything other than that they both wanted to protect their daughter. That whether she had any knowledge that Barry wanted to maintain his position in the enterprise. Oh, and this might be important to help. There is a distinction between his RICO count, which I have not briefed, I haven't really spent much time on, and the Vicar purpose. I mean, there's distinct standards. And the Vicar purpose is, you know, it's a violent crime in aid of racketeering. So it has to be, and it has to be committed by someone with a substantial purpose of maintaining their position in that offense. So there's no indication that she knew any of the people she was assisting, let alone Barry Gilton, who, you know, was employed with the Boys and Girls Club, you know, that he had any interest in promoting his position in CDP. That she even knew it was a racketeering enterprise, but that, you know, affecting interstate commerce, you know, that it's not, it's just not in the evidence.
Well, the jury could infer that there was a gang that was a racketeering enterprise here, right? That goes too far, I think, to say that they couldn't assume there was a racketeering enterprise somewhere in the background here.
She might have known that. I mean, there's no evidence that she knows anything about Antonio and Alfonso or Barry's violent activities outside the night in question.
Well, she might not know there. That's fair. But just the idea that there is CDP and that it's a racketeering enterprise, that is something the jury would have to be able to infer. Whether these other people are connected to it or did the murder because of it, that's a different question. But just, it sounded like you were saying she doesn't even know there's a racketeering enterprise anywhere.
Whether or not she knows of the existence of CDP as a racketeering enterprise, that is not clear in the record. There's nothing that says that she would. I mean, she attended the funeral along with hundreds of other people, of Julius Hughes, who was killed and he was also a member of the Boys and Girls Club where her husband, her partner worked. There's...
But isn't it, I mean, wasn't part of this that there was this huge prosecution of all these crimes of this CDP? I mean, CDP is a major gang in the neighborhood, as I understand, and she lives in the neighborhood and she's basically in a family with some of these people. I mean, the idea that she doesn't know that there's a gang sounds like that is stretching what we could infer.
Your Honor, if you look at the evidence that was presented, you know, this is the government prosecuted a gang. JB, the informant, talked about what it was like to be in that gang. He was a young man around Antonio's age, and he talked about, you know, his experiences and his associations with the house that belonged to Gilton's family, but that they weren't living in. They talked about Grove Street as a headquarters, but that was also Grandmommy Williams' house. And another witness talked about how that was just a grandmother's house, and it was a polling place as well. I mean, Ms. Mercado is never placed anywhere where she would have heard specifically information about CDP. Like, that's not there. It's not like the gun in Burnett that she had an opportunity to see. But I will say this, just knowing that a gang exists, that can't be enough, because that would put everyone in the Fillmore community assuming a Vicar purpose motivation to anyone in the community. And the specific knowledge element is much more specific than that. It's not that the gang exists, but that Alfonso or Antonio or Barry had the purpose of maintaining their position in it, and she was assisting one of those individuals. Oh, and we also haven't even gotten to like Prescott and Magnus. I mean, to support this conviction, we would have to base it on this court would be overruling its precedent in those cases that said statements to the police are not enough. I do want to make sure I have time for rebuttal, but I also want to answer questions. So,
Judge Corman?
I'm sorry. I want to make sure I answer all of your questions.
I was not talking to you. I'm sorry. I was just asking Judge Corman, do you have any questions for defense counsel?
I had a question about the jury instruction. It seemed to me that the lawyers, it's true that when the judge specifically charged this charge, as I understand it, that he did not require a vicar purpose, but the lawyers told the jury, both the prosecution and the defense argued that it did. And earlier on MER 33, when he gave a supplemental instruction to the jury, he correctly instructed the jury with respect to that. So why can't we conclude that the defect in the original instruction was harmless?
Mr. Edwards, there are several reasons why. The first being that this court's precedent have continually said that oral pronouncements cannot override the written instructions. So that's one. Second, the jury specifically asked, what is the difference between murder and murder and aid of racketeering? And that was for count two. And the court said that they had to find murder and aid of racketeering for count two. The jury was left with the instruction for count five, which only said simple murder. So it absolutely confirmed, when they asked what's the difference between murder and murder and racketeering, it appeared to be distinguishing count two from count five. And again, the instruction for count five pointed to the definition of murder in count one. Finally, this is all Chapman. Chapman, the government has the burden to prove that it did not contribute to the verdict. When you have the omission of a requisite element from an instruction pointing to another definition that does not apply, I mean, it absolutely might have impacted the jury. So it completely satisfies Chapman.
But the jury, in response to the jury note, that the jury sent out, that what's the difference between the charge of murder and the charge of murder and aid of racketeering. As I understand it, the judge gave the following instruction. The law regarding aiding and abetting is stated in the jury instruction 40. In answer to your specific question, in order to find the defendant guilty of murder and aid of racketeering on aiding and abetting theory, the aider and abettor would have to know that a substantial purpose for the person who committed the murder was, and I'll skip all the others, for the purpose of gaining entrance, maintaining position, or increasing position in the CDP. So in addition to each of the lawyers arguing to the jury that that was required, and I'm not unsympathetic to your principal argument, but I am troubled by the fact that when this charge seems to me, combined with the fact that the two lawyers argued to the jury that this mental element that we're talking about right now, in terms of what she had to know, was the motive for the killing, seems to me to render the charge, the defect in the charge, harmless. And that's the question that I have.
Your Honor, to clarify, that question and that response was directed for count two, which is aiding and abetting. That was count two. Count five, which was assisting after the fact, that was never corrected, and that still said murder. They were never instructed that for count five, there had to be a vicar purpose. If you look at the instruction for count five on page 93 of the excerpts of record, that's what the jury got. They received no clarification other than the oral arguments of counsel, which are not enough. It's a very confusing standard. The jury asked many questions about the standard, but only for the instruction that included that standard, which was count two. Count five's instruction specifically moved them away from that standard and pointed to count one, which was just simple murder. So that's the distinction. The only count that she was convicted on was the one where they were not instructed on that verdict. I have never seen such a clear evidence in support of the harmfulness of an instructional error.
Okay.
Did I answer the question, Your Honor?
Did.
Thank you very much.
Great. And we'll give you time for rebuttal.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Let's hear from the government now.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Matthew Yelovich on behalf of the United States. I'd like to pick up where the court just left off, which is on the jury instruction, although I'm happy to answer questions otherwise. The instruction as a whole and in context did not fail to adequately guide the jury's deliberation, and that's because the district court in this case repeatedly linked the instruction for count five, accessory after the fact, to the instruction for count two, which had the vicar purpose element in it. I would refer the court to excerpts of record 2192, where the court in the introductory remarks to the substantive instructions says, count five is accessory. Lupe Mercado is charged in count five with being an accessory to the murder of Calvin Sneed, which is charged in count two. Immediately before that, on 2191 and 2192, the court had already instructed that count two was murder and aid of racketeering. During the count two instruction, the court, of course, instructs the jury that the jury needs to find a vicar motive for Sneed's killing. That's at excerpts of record 2216. And then after the count five instruction, the accessory after the fact instruction, the court links the verdict form to between count five and count two. And this is at excerpts of record 2226, where the court says that the jury, in order to find the defendant guilty, the jury must find that Lupe Mercado, quote, knowing that offenses against the United States had been committed, namely murder as charged in count two. So from that record, again, under this court's case law, United States versus Dixon, cited in the government's answering brief at page 50, we look at jury instructions as a whole and in context, and we don't isolate a single instruction. And on the whole, it's clear that the court is repeatedly linking the accessory after the fact instruction to the substantive offense that Lupe Mercado needed to know about. And in the substantive offense, it lists the vicar purpose.
It just, you know, what's hard to accept about that line of argument is that the reference to count one in the instructions on the...
Your Honor, I would explain the reference to count one as explaining what murder is, not what Lupe Mercado needed to know about this particular murder, but what it is that a murder involves. And I think the generic definition of murder makes sense because the jury needs to know what action, what actus reus is involved. But as to what Lupe Mercado needed to know about the murderer's purpose, I think that's clearly spelled out in count two. And on the instructions as a whole is repeatedly referred to in terms of what the accessory after the fact instruction refers back to as to what elements she needed to know.
Then, so how do you explain the note then that as to the deliberations on count two?
So the note is actually very specific. I know that my friend wants to focus on one part of it where they ask about what is the difference between murder and murder in aid of racketeering. But if you look at the note, this jury was very careful. This is at excerpt of record 32, where the jury said that this note is related to the first note regarding the third method identified in note one. And the jury's question is, what is the aider and abettor's purpose in acting? Because Lupe Mercado, recall, is charged as an aider and abettor of the substantive vicar murder. So the question is, what does she need to have as a purpose if she's aiding and abetting this offense? Does she need to personally want to increase her standing in the gang? Does she need to want to increase the standing or maintain the standing of the murderers in aiding and abetting? Or is it enough that she aid and abet the murder of Calvin Sneed? And I think that the jury's note is quite detailed and specific on that point. And this is not a jury that didn't know how to ask questions. I mean, the jury notes are clear, they're detailed, they are very specific as to what instruction they're asking about. None of that is relevant as to count five, because for count five, there's no question that she did not have to have a vicar purpose. She just needed to know that someone, anyone committing the murder, had a vicar purpose in order to be guilty.
Well,
I'm sorry, I don't know.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm just troubled by that. It seems to me that the purpose of this killing was revenge against Sneed for what he had done to the daughter of Lupe and her partner. And it seems to me that your argument is that if she knew that he was a member of this enterprise, that's enough. Is any murder committed by someone who's a member of an enterprise, is that automatically make it a killing in furtherance of it? In furtherance of a desire to increase his position or place in the enterprise?
No, Your Honor. Not any murder, but a murder in response to disrespect to a core CDP family where the murderers are operating in a gang.
It's a core family that's not a member of the whatever you call it, CPD or B, just because that alone is enough?
No, Your Honor.
And what you have here is compelling evidence that both Lupe and her partner or husband desired revenge for what the Sneed had done to their daughter. In my view, that was the reason for this killing, and that the person who did it was doing it essentially as a favor and not to enhance any position within a criminal enterprise. And I'm quite frankly troubled by the nature of your theory. I mean, first of all, this was a plain out-and-out state crime that, in my view, didn't even belong in federal court. But then you take it and you put it into this RICO enterprise, and therefore, just because he was a member of the enterprise, the murderer, and they have some tangential relationship to the enterprise, the murder was done not for the most obvious reason, but for a reason that is not entirely clear.
So there's a lot to unpack there, Your Honor. If I could have a moment to respond, there are a few points I would make. The first is, yes, obviously it's one rational view of the evidence is the one that the defense argued at trial, and I'm not disputing that, which is that this was a personally motivated murder by Barry Gilton and Lupe Mercado. That's not the only rational view of the evidence as to why the CDP actors acted, because on this record, you have a member of CDP testifying that CDP members were expected to say yes to shooting, that their rank was downgraded when they refused to shoot, that they had to maintain a reputation for event.
This is not clear to me that there was any order given to shoot. I mean,
so on that specific point,
it's this whole thing, your whole theory is very troubling to me. You can see that the reason that they wanted him dead was because of what Sneed had done to their daughter. And so they go to him Antonio or the other person, and they ask him to do it. And then from that, they go to ask him to do it. And from that, you assume that they knew that the reason he was doing it was to enhance his position in the enterprise, when there's not even any evidence that anybody ordered him to do it, any superior asked him to do it, or that he even needed to do it.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think there is definitely record evidence on those points. And I'd like to direct Your Honor to excerpts of record. And I apologize, I have the excerpts of record for the Barry Gilton excerpts, but I can get you I can get you the transcript. But it's excerpts of record 764 in the Barry Gilton excerpts of record shows that Alfonso Williams, one of the three murderers, was a shot caller in the gang, a very, very powerful member of the gang. There's also evidence in the record that Antonio Gilton, one of the three shooters, had personally had his rank downgraded in the gang on a previous occasion when he refused to shoot. And that's at excerpts of record 575 to 576.
That must have been a very long time ago though, right? Because he had been living in LA for 6 years or so?
Your Honor, he had been living in LA, although there's, again, looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the government and with all reasonable inferences drawn in the verdict's favor, you have testimony in the record from the gang cooperator that he had seen Antonio Gilton in the neighborhood after the move to LA. And then the next question is, so in your view, was Antonio Gilton a member of CDP? The cooperator says yes. Then after that, there's testimony that Antonio Gilton, when he's arrested, is arrested at gang headquarters with what the cooperator called gang headquarters with two CDP members. That's at the trial transcript 916. There's also the fact that he's shot outside of gang headquarters a few weeks after the murder of Calvin Sneed, and that's at excerpts of record 835. So you have evidence in the record that Antonio...
I didn't hear. Who was shot?
Antonio Gilton was shot outside of gang headquarters several weeks after the murder of Calvin Sneed, which I think I'll probably get to more in the Barry Gilton argument as to why that shows a fear of reprisal for the Calvin Sneed murder. But my point in mentioning it here is a rational juror could have found that Antonio Gilton was very much still a member of CDP. There's testimony from the cooperator who says that members could move away from the area and still claim CDP and still participate in CDP as members. So viewing that testimony in the light most favorable to the government and with all reasonable inferences drawn in the government's favor, I think a rational juror could conclude Antonio Gilton is still a member of CDP when he commits this murder with the shot caller from CDP, Alfonso Williams.
And he knew all of that, and Lupe knew all of that.
Your Honor, there's not direct evidence that Lupe was aware that Alfonso Williams was the shot caller or that Antonio Gilton had his rank downgraded. But let me just respond on what a rational juror could have inferred from the evidence, because I think there are three categories of evidence that a rational juror could have looked to understand Lupe Mercado's knowledge. The first is the evidence that I've already discussed about what CDP was, what their MO was in terms of...
That's beside the point. I understand that. The question is, what did he know about his motive and the so-called circumstantial evidence that you just referred to?
So
didn't know that he was a gangbanger or whatever the term you used. But what do we know that she knew that would tell us that she was aware that the reason for this revenge killing at her, presumably possibly at her or her partner's request, was done to enhance his position in the enterprise?
So a few points on that, Your Honor. The first is she is in direct contact with Antonio Gilton in the 2 days before the murder. That's at excerpts of record 17.
That doesn't prove that she knew. That just goes to show that she wanted him to commit the murder because of what Sneed had done to her daughter.
That is one rational view of the evidence, Your Honor. My contention is it's not the only one. And if you look at United States versus Burnett, cited in the government's brief at pages 27 and 50, in that case, there was no direct evidence that the defendant had observed the gun in being an accessory after the fact to armed robbery. But this court said, well, she had the key to the motel room where the gun was eventually seized, and therefore she would have been in a position to know that there was an armed robbery. She may have also been in the getaway vehicle. There wasn't direct evidence on that.
And so I don't dispute that you could show this by circumstantial evidence. I just don't see it here.
Well, there's an incredible...
The evidence, the direct evidence is so overwhelming as to the motive for this killing and why she wanted him dead.
Again, Your Honor, that makes sense given the jury's verdict, right? The jury acquitted her of having a vicar purpose herself and Barry Gilton of having a vicar purpose herself. But it doesn't mean that she didn't know that a substantial purpose of someone who she was so close to, who called her mom, who lived with her for a time, who she sent her daughter to live with, and who she was in close touch with in the days leading up to the murder, that she would not have been in a position to know that he personally had his rank downgraded by refusing to shoot in the past, and who then she approached to shoot in this instance with Barry Gilton after she and Barry Gilton had failed to kill Calvin Sneed. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
He had his rank reduced. And how would she have assumed that this would have increased his rank when it was being done purely as a favor to her?
So again, Your Honor, I think that's one rational view of the evidence. I just don't think it's the only one. I think another rational view of the evidence is this is a dominant family within CDP, the gang. And CDP members are expected to do what the Giltons ask of them. That's testimony from the cooperator. And this is someone from the Giltons asking them to kill someone. So
the cooperator said that they were expected to do what the Giltons asked of them.
Yes, the cooperator said that if a Gilton asked a CDP member to do something, they would do it. That's the testimony.
I understand that. But she asked him to do it, not to increase his position in the enterprise, but because of what he had done to her daughter. You know, I have to say, as a pure matter of policy, I'm concerned about the extent to which your argument is being used and where it could go in terms of anybody drawn into this under circumstances such as this. Why wasn't this simply a state prosecution?
Your Honor, I see I'm over my time. May I answer Judge Corman's question?
I have a few questions too, so you're going to be here a little bit longer.
That's fine. So Judge Corman, in answer to your question, the record is silent as to why the state ultimately dismissed their charges. But what I would say is that the evidence is quite strong that Lupe Mercado and Barry Gilton were, again, viewing it most favorably to the government, were, quote, basically a part of CDP. That's the testimony from the gang cooperator. So
this is, he said they were a part of it?
Basically a part of CDP. That's the direct quote. And so the question is, you know, viewing that in the light most favorable to the government, this is not someone who's being swept up from the periphery. This is someone who lives in a house that gives the gang part of its name.
Okay, so it's part of it. That still
doesn't... He didn't live in that house. Isn't it a different house, different family house?
She moves out of that house and moves down to 35 Jennings Court, but 1458 Grove is the grandmammy house, and this house is the the house that Barry Gilton lived in was on Central. Barry Gilton and Lupe Mercado lived in was on Central Avenue and provided the C and CDP.
That wasn't my understanding, but it's a minor point.
I'm sorry, Judge Watford. I know that you had some questions.
Yeah, I just wanted to see, Judge Corman, did you have further questions?
No, I don't.
Okay, let me just be real technical for a second. The three participants in the murder, as I understand it, this defendant only helped, her actions only helped two of them. Is that right, Antonio and her partner? She didn't help, nothing she did helped Williams, right? So he's out. He can't, whatever we're going to predicate this charge on, it can't be anything that she knew about his actions. Is that fair?
I don't think that's right, Your Honor. I think that she could be an accessory after the fact to any of the three of them. And
she has to do something, though, that helps the principal. And she didn't, none of her actions did anything whatsoever, as I understand it, to help Williams. That's what I'm trying to get clarity on from you. Is that right?
So she deactivates her phone the day after the murder on June 5th and thereby destroys phone evidence. That's at excerpts of record 1329 to 1330.
He was in contact on her phone with Williams, you're saying? No.
So, Your Honor, that is not in the record.
Right.
It's just that on that same day, Alfonso Williams destroyed
right.
evidence on his
so, but there's phone. No way a rational jury could infer that the two of them, this defendant and Williams, had somehow coordinated their evidence destruction efforts, right?
There's nothing in the record to suggest
yeah.
that.
Yeah, okay, so Williams is out. I think that's a fair statement. And is it also fair, then, that Barry Gilton is out on the same rationale that our district court judge here used to when ruling on the sufficiency challenge? Because he was acquitted, of course, of the
so he's acquitted of acting with a vicar purpose. As a technical matter, Your Honor, I don't think that precludes us from maintaining the accessory after the fact charge to her assisting him in committing vicar murder, even though the jury did not find that. I think that the question is whether there's sufficient evidence on the accessory charge, again, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, that Barry Gilton acted with a vicar purpose. But I take Your Honor's point, and I do think that evidence is strong on Antonio Gilton. So
okay,
I don't
so that's
know
why
that
it really does come down to Antonio. And that's where I guess I share Judge Corman's view of this, is that because there was a family relationship, it had nothing to do with the gang. Antonio is the cousin of Ms. Mercado's partner, is that right? I mean, there's a family, a direct family blood relationship. And so I guess I just don't see how a rational jury could say, okay, well, presumably it was Barry who made the request to Antonio to help out. He goes to a family member, a cousin, for something incredibly personal, has nothing whatsoever to do with the gang. It's not like Snead is some rival gang member there in San Francisco who's poaching on CDP's territory. There has nothing to do with that. It's a purely personal thing. And her partner goes to a family member to ask for help. And I guess I am at a loss to see how, in terms of the mens rea that Ms. Mercado would have, that she would know that the reason Antonio agrees to help in this personal family matter had anything whatsoever to do with maintaining or improving his standing within CDP. That just makes no sense to me whatsoever. So I just wanted to give you another crack at explaining why, as to Antonio specifically, you think a rational jury could draw that inference about her knowledge of his motivation.
I appreciate the opportunity, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So I think what I would say is, starting with the case law with Banks, the motive that Antonio needed to have is just a substantial purpose, not the only purpose. So the reason he commits this murder can be a mixed motive. It can be, you know, he's personally allied with Gilton and Mercado. He's strongly about Letitia, and he knows that he is still a CDP member and he wants to maintain his position. Those are not exclusive.
What is your definition of substantial? Wasn't the substantial motive the desire to effectuate a request to carry out retribution?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that that's exclusive of a gang purpose either.
Substantial motives.
I'm sorry?
Just had to be a substantial motive to increase or maintain his place in the enterprise. I don't see that there was a substantial motive I don't know how you define that term. The substantial motive here was retribution as a favor to a friend or a relative for that matter. I don't know, how are you defining substantial?
So in Banks, this court used substantial motive to mean it doesn't need to be the sole motive. Now I understand the court's question. And what I would say is, you know, again, could any rational juror view this as someone who is acting solely for personal motivation? Of course, but we have to assume the evidence in the light most favorable to the government and all reasonable inferences in the government's favor at this stage.
Let's assume for argument's sake for the moment that we accept that it was a dual motive. But you had said that it had to be, if it were dual, it had to be the preserving his place or enlarging had to be a substantial one. And the fact that it's dual hardly established that it's substantial or that she knew it.
No, but under this court's case law, substantial can coexist with other motives. I mean, in Banks, there's...
But I'm still asking you for what your definition is of substantial. You're just saying because there's two motives, we've said it's okay. But you what makes this a substantial motive? And what indicates that she was aware of it?
I think that the response I would give, Your Honor, is what inferences could a jury draw from this evidence? And the inferences a jury could draw from the evidence are that Antonio Gilton had previously had his gun taken away by the gang when he refused to shoot. And here he is approached to shoot. And he says yes. Now, one view of that evidence is, well, he only could have said yes because he was related to the Giltons and wished to help a family friend. Another view of that evidence is he was substantially motivated to maintain his position in the gang, particularly because Alfonso Williams, the shot caller in the gang and a very powerful figure in the gang, is in the car when they're pulling the trigger. So whether Antonio Gilton would have done this on his own if asked by Barry Gilton is certainly a question that defense counsel can argue. I think my point is just that a rational juror could view the circumstances of this murder and say Antonio Gilton, having previously had his rank decreased, now approached to shoot again with a shot caller and leader of the gang in the car, when he pulls the trigger or when he's a part of this murder, does he do so with a substantial motivation to maintain his rank in CDP? And I think a rational juror could have said yes to that. And as to his relationship,
that she knew that his, for example, that his rank had been lowered.
I think given the closeness of their relationship and their communications in the days leading up to the murder, I think it's a fair inference for a rational juror to say she was in a prime position to know what his motivations were, and that one of those motivations could have been a substantial purpose to commit the murder, to maintain his position in the gang. Excuse me, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I see I'm well over my time. Yeah. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That's just one more question. If we reverse this conviction because of the instructional error, are you going to retry Lupe?
Your Honor, I think that would be the government's intent, but I can't speak to that. I don't know the answer to that question. I can certainly file something supplemental.
Because the only purpose of us reaching the sufficiency is so that you could retry her, right, if we do reverse the conviction?
Yes.
So if you're not going to, it would be helpful to know because we wouldn't have to do this.
I think it would be our intent to retry Lupe Mercado if the jury instruction was proven to be erroneous, Your Honor. It's hard for me to answer that question on the spot, but I certainly can find out an answer and get it to you.
How long has she been incarcerated during this whole period since her conviction?
She got time served as a sentence, Your Honor, so she's out of custody.
I didn't hear what you said.
Her sentence was time served, so she's out of custody.
And you're going to prosecute her anyway.
We don't always pursue prosecutions just in order for the sentence, Your Honor. But I take Your Honor's point.
Okay. Thank you for suffering through our barrage of questions. We appreciate it. You've done, and you have double duty, so you're not even done yet. Boy, it's a long, long morning. Okay, let's put, that's maybe a perfect amount of time. You can just count down from there, and we'll hear from you. Oh, no. can't do it that way. That's fine. 2 minutes for rebuttal. Please.
Thank you, Honor. Quickly, at some points, I just want to point to the argument, the reply brief discussing each of the government's cases regarding the instructional error. The oral instructions are never sufficient with compared to the written instructions. I wanted to point out Rodriguez, which was a very recent case, which had a similar error. So I discussed those in the reply brief. I also want to emphasize that from the first issue, the actus reus is, it would be important to uphold this court's prior authority on this issue, that it really is insufficient to just have statements to the law enforcement. And the premise behind that is that Section 3 should not simply criminalize anything less than enthusiastic cooperation with investigating authorities. That was in Lepanto. So I think that's important to keep in mind.
Well, I think Lepanto was a 10th Circuit case.
I'm exactly. Sure. Yeah.
Case, but it's so red. It's so red Miller, I think. And that goes to the issue. I mean, the 9th Circuit cases that you rely on involve a different statute, which any reference to Section 3 is arguably dicta, but the way the 10th Circuit may have construed it in a way that it wasn't just sort of a kind of a idle, passing, thoughtless reference.
I do think that it's very hard to hang conviction on that, those statements. And I discussed those in the briefs. The house on Central Avenue belonged to his family. There was no evidence that they lived there at any time, that Lupe Mercado ever lived there. And Antonio, there's nothing even saying his rank was lowered, just that his gun was taken away. There was no evidence that he cared about that. And finally, I do urge this court to address this overreach of the government in this situation. I do think it is important to be addressed and to not permit them to be inferring a Vicar motive simply because people are family members or live in the community.
Okay, thank you. Can I ask one quick question that
you'll
know? Was your client already in trial in state court on murder charges when this all happened?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, it's not part of the issues being raised on addressed on appeal. But however, yes, she was there. The trial was a month away, I believe, when the indictment was filed.
I see. Okay. So it was upcoming, but it hadn't yet started.
I'm sorry. Was it the same case that she was on trial?
Yes. Yes. It was for that case. And it was a month beforehand. Mm-hmm. And I was not the trial attorney. So, I'm the appellate attorney, but that's what I know.
I mean, I just want to be clear. It arose out of the same nuclear
facts. Yes. Yeah. And she's on probation now. So it is still an ongoing impact on her life.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I'm not suggesting that it's moved.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We will hear. So the case just argued is submitted.